Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. My guest today is Dana Balter. She's challenging Republican incumbent John Katko in New York's 24th congressional district in an election that will be held this November. The 24th district includes all of Cayuga, Onondaga, and Wayne counties, and the western portion of Oswego County, including the cities of Oswego and Fulton. Dana was recently endorsed by the Democratic Party committees in all four counties. There is another announced Democratic candidate, William Bass, and if he secures enough petition signatures to force a primary in June, I will invite both him and Dana back on the program for a debate prior to that election. I should also note that Dana is a visiting professor at the Maxwell School of Syracuse University, where I also teach. We have met before, but we do not know each other and have not worked together. Dana, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, let me start with the basic core question, I think, for a challenger. You know, elections are about making choices, and you're running against John Katko. So summarize the critical case that you'll be making against Congressman Katko's tenure in Congress. Why shouldn't voters in that district reelect him in November?
Well, I think that one of the main functions or responsibilities of a representative is to be accessible to the people that they represent and to listen to those people, to ask what they need, what they're concerned about, what they want their representative to do on their behalf. I think that is the core of the job. And one of my frustrations as a voter and a resident in this district is that my congressional representative has been virtually inaccessible to me. I think that John Katko has abdicated one of his core responsibilities as a congressperson by not opening himself up to free-flowing communication from his constituents, the fact that he won't meet with us in public, the fact that he doesn't ask for our input before casting votes on really, really important issues. I think, you know, my experience shows that people all across this district are really frustrated by that, are fed up with it, and are ready for something new, and want somebody who is going to show up, who's going to listen, and who's going to advocate on their behalf rather than following the lead of corporate donors and party leadership, but put the needs of the residents first.
So I'm going to get into some specific policy questions with you in a little bit, but for the purposes of your answer here, then what I'm hearing is a focus on the process by which the incumbent has been representing the district rather than I'm running because of these votes or these policy positions.
Well, it's both.
Okay.
The process is the first part of it, which I think is we can't overestimate the importance of the process, right? We are a democratic society, and that is about representing the people and making sure that the people have a strong voice in their own government. But there are plenty of product issues as well, and I'm happy to talk about a number of issues. I have concern about a lot of the votes that the congressman has cast. The vote on the tax bill, for example, you know, is one of the most recent that I think is going to be particularly harmful for New Yorkers. And again, in terms of taking input from constituents, we have polling data that shows that more than 55% of the people who live in this district did not want that tax bill. So, we can talk about individual votes as well, and I'm happy to do so because there's plenty there.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that. We'll talk about it now. You would have voted differently on the tax bill. Presumably,
absolutely,
you would have voted no on that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I want to come back with a question about that. But are there other significant votes where you would have voted differently? I mean, maybe you just give me sort of the top, you know, three or four there.
Okay. So one of the things that Congressman Katko has done recently is not only vote for, but co-sponsor the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act.
Mm-hmm.
I am incredibly troubled by that vote. Our own law enforcement communities have told us that will make us less safe. Our DA here in Onondaga County didn't agree with that vote. And it is, you know, for a person and a party who talk about the importance of states' rights to vote for something like that that undermines New York State's ability
and
to set its own rules.
And summarize the bill, though, for our listeners, just in case.
It's basically the idea that people who have concealed carry permits in other states are allowed to conceal carry weapons in New York State, regardless of New York State's laws, right? So it is essentially a race to the bottom on gun safety, and it means that the least restrictive or the most lax rules hold. And so it...
For people who are traveling here.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So it takes away from a state's ability to make its own safety rules and laws. And that sort of fundamentally goes against the idea of supporting states' rights. But it's also a very significant safety concern. And, you know, I don't need to explain how big of an issue that is and how concerned we are as a nation about making sure that our communities are safe. So that's another one that I think is extremely problematic. I'm very concerned about his environmental votes. He has voted in lockstep with Paul Ryan and the GOP to roll back environmental protections that the Obama administration put in place. He voted to dump coal ash in our streams. His score from the League of Conservation Voters is abysmal. And, you know, protecting our environment is something that is incredibly important for our kids and our grandkids, the future of our communities, particularly in a place like upstate New York, where we have all of these spectacular resources. We have the most beautiful lakes and farms and forests. And we should be doing everything we can to protect those things. I am also concerned by his repeated attempts to defund Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood is an incredibly important community resource. We see in communities like ours, particularly here in Syracuse, tremendous numbers of low-income women depending on Planned Parenthood for health care, for well visits, for cancer screenings. Planned Parenthood is responsible for one-third of the AIDS screening, HIV and AIDS screening in this country. We can't eliminate that important source of health care in our communities.
So one quick follow-up. Let's go back to the tax bill. Mm-hmm. You had said that it will cost people here in this district money. Could you explain that in a little more detail? Because there are different components of the tax bill, mm-hmm. and one of the congressman's arguments in favor of it when he was explaining his vote was he was making the claim that on balance, when you look at the deductions that are going to be raised and you look at the child tax credit and et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera, that on balance it was going to help most of the families.
So I think it's interesting that you characterize his argument that way, because what I've heard him say is focus on specific components and talk about how a couple of individual components of this bill are going to be beneficial for families in central New York. I think that what he doesn't do is take a good look at the whole bill on balance and understand what the overall effects are going to be. So it is true that there are some families in the middle class who will see modest benefits from this bill in the short term. And, you know, I'm sure that they're going to be very happy about that. But when we look over the long term on this bill, the overall benefits absolutely do not accrue to middle class families or working families. The vast majority of the benefits of this bill, something like 85% of the benefits of this bill, go to the very top of the income distribution. We're talking the top 1% of Americans. The other thing that the congressman neglects to mention is that the bill's time horizon is 10 years, and over the course of that 10 years, the benefits that are initially given to working families fade out and disappear, whereas the benefits that are given to wealthy corporations and the top 1% of income earners increase and become permanent. And that further skews the distribution of benefits from this bill. Another thing that I'm really concerned about with this tax bill is the incentives that it gives to corporations. Again, one of the things that the congressman and Paul Ryan and many members of the GOP have used as an explanation for why this bill was good for us is the notion that it's going to bring jobs. But what they don't talk about is the provision in the bill that does exactly the opposite. This bill slashes tax rates on production overseas to such a degree that it incentivizes not only large multinational corporations, but also small and medium-sized businesses to move their production overseas so that they pay less taxes. That has the effect of shipping already existing American jobs offshore. They're not talking about that. And that is a tremendous problem with this bill. We need tax policy that puts the needs of working families at the center, not as an afterthought.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Dana Balter, Democratic candidate for Congress in New York's 24th Congressional District. When rankings of independents in Congress are done, Congressman Katko comes out near the top for a Republican. And at the end of his first term, for example, he was ranked as the 8th most independent Republican member. You have linked him to Paul Ryan several times in what you've said already. What is your take on his independence from the Republican Party? And do you not buy some of these statistics, which suggest that, at least among the Republicans, he is pretty independent?
Mm-hmm. I don't see a lot of evidence of that independence. And we can talk about the efficacy of rankings, right? And because they're rankings, they are putting him in comparison to other people, and maybe it's a party-wide problem. I'm not sure. But what I do see is that Congressman Katko has voted with Donald Trump and his agenda more than 91% of the time. And I don't think Donald Trump's agenda could ever be characterized as anything close to middle of the road or reasonable. And I am really concerned about a representative who takes that kind of allegiance, who displays that kind of allegiance, and an unwillingness to criticize when necessary. There are a lot of things that have been happening in this country, both in terms of actual issues or policies being advanced, and in terms of rhetoric, that are really harmful. And I think it is more important now than it has ever been for our elected representatives to be willing to stand up and say no. And John Katko doesn't do that. And silence is complicity. When you don't say no, you're condoning. And again, as a voter and a constituent of his, I have been incredibly disappointed in his unwillingness to stand up for what's right.
Let me just push you a little bit on that last point in terms of his relationship with the president. He was quite open and quite critical of Donald Trump as a candidate, and has been quite critical of President Trump in terms of his style, but also some of the policies. He is a Republican. He's in a majority party in Congress. I mean, you've got to be able to get things done, and so there is, I think, a reasonable expectation that as a Republican, he wouldn't be spending all of his time in the resistance, so to speak. So parse out why you think from where he is, he's really kind of let the district down, which is what you're suggesting.
Yeah. So. You make a good point, but I'm not asking Congressman Katko to pick up signs and march in the street and say I'm resisting Donald Trump. What I'm asking from Congressman Katko is to be a voice for the 24th District on issues that people here really care about. So, for example, when the president goes on television or goes on Twitter, more likely, and conflates the issue of immigration with national security in such a way that he is trying to foment fear and xenophobia in this country, I expect my representative to say, let's have a reasonable conversation about national security. Let's talk about what it is and what it isn't. And let's be really clear that when we are talking about, for example, sanctuary cities, we are not talking about places that give cover to violent criminals. There is a lot of intentional chaos created by this administration, and the people who live at home, who are trying to make it through their day-to-day lives, feel a tremendous amount of anxiety about that. And I think it is incumbent upon our electeds to use their voices to tell us where they stand and to be a bulwark against that chaos for their communities. And that doesn't mean being part of the resistance. That means being an honest broker of American values.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Dana Balter. She's a Democrat challenging incumbent Congressman John Katko for the seat in New York's 24th congressional district. So we were talking about independence before. We were talking about John Katko's independence from the Republicans. Let me ask you about yours. So could you give me a couple of significant policy positions on which you differ from, say, Nancy Pelosi, if we're going to use that as the foil?
So to be honest with you, I don't have a rundown of Nancy Pelosi's positions on all the issues,
Let's say Democratic mainstream. Yeah. Let's say the sort of the mainstream Democratic Party positions. Where would you differ from those?
So I think one is, and maybe this is becoming more mainstream, I'm not sure. Well, it remains to be seen. But one policy area that I feel very strongly about is healthcare policy, and I am a supporter of Medicare for All. I think that we need to have a single-payer system in this country for a number of reasons. One of the most significant is that it's the smart economic policy. I talk to a lot of small business owners who want single-payer health care because right now small businesses are drowning in health care costs for their employees. They have to not only pay part of the cost for their employees' plans, but they also spend time and money and resources every year trying to find the next cheapest plan to move their employees to. And if we had single payer, which separated healthcare from employment, small businesses would be able to reinvest those resources in their businesses, pay higher wages, hire more employees, grow their businesses. It would also free up people who want to be entrepreneurs, who are afraid to leave their jobs because leaving your employment means losing your health insurance. Again, if employment and health insurance were not connected, they would be free to start their own ventures. And we have to support small business growth because that's the engine of our economy. So single-payer healthcare is a smart economic choice for our country. It's something I feel very strongly about.
So let me follow up on that. So the example you just gave me, I think it's fair to say, is both one that is does have a lot of prominent supporters, you know, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and others. But it is an example where your position is, I think, fair to say, to the left of the, let's say, the Obamacare position, all right, some blend of public and private and what we have, building on what we have now. So is that the way that I should understand how you relate to the Democratic Party? Are you on the more progressive wing? I know elected officials and candidates don't like being labeled, but it is a shorthand that helps people try to sort it out.
So I don't like being labeled. And the reason I don't is it's not a strategic reason. It's because I don't think the labels apply. And I don't think the danger, I think, in labeling, using labels is that everybody has their own idea of what those labels mean. And so if you use them as a shorthand, what I have found is it's a very quick way to lead people to misunderstand the point.
So let me try it this way if I could. And you can just play the label game with me for a second here. Give me an example of where your position would be considered more conservative than the mainstream Democratic position. Where would you differ there? Because the other example you gave me was, I think, arguably a more progressive position.
Yes. And I will, one thing I will say about the more progressive, the reason I hesitate to call that more left is that what we're seeing in public opinion lately, particularly given all of the Republican attacks on healthcare over the last year, is that support for single payer has become very widespread and is no longer a left-leaning issue among the population, right? So there's also a difference between the way politicians talk about things and the way the people talk about things. And that, again, is why I'm concerned about those labels. I'm not sure where my position would be more conservative. I think one thing that I am very focused on goes back to the process issues that you were talking about before, and that may be considered a more conservative or a less left-leaning approach. than what we're seeing right now out of Washington. But one of the biggest problems we have is the dysfunction in Congress, right? And that is largely due to this extreme polarization and unwillingness to work together. So for me, one of the things that I think sort of brings me to the other end of the political spectrum is not only my willingness, but my insistence on working together. And both because of the way our government is structured and because of the polarization that we see right now, the only way forward, the only way we can make progress as a country is by working together, right? The old reaching across the aisle. And as far as I'm concerned, that has to be the primary focus of our lawmakers once they are in office.
So give me a couple examples, if you could, of where you would see, if you were elected, good opportunities to work with Republicans mm-hmm. on particular issues. Where do you see where you, as a member, would be working across the aisle with Republicans? And also, to extend the question, with President Trump, where do you mm-hmm. see where you could work with him on particular issues?
Okay, so let's stick with healthcare for a mm-hmm. minute. I said I support Medicare for All, which I do. I think that is the ultimate goal, but it's going to take us quite a while to get there because there's a lot of work to do before we can get there. In the meantime, we need to protect and fix the ACA. So one of the things that came out of our national conversation in this last year is an acknowledgement by all parties that there are things in the ACA that need to be addressed that aren't working as well as they can. I think that's great ground for working together. We see, you know, Medicaid expansion, which is one of the most successful parts of the ACA, happened in a lot of what we call red states with Republican governors. So there is a lot of interest on both sides of the aisle in making that program work. So working to shore up the markets, for example, is a great place, I think, for bipartisan effort. I also think if we look to the conversation on gun safety right now, I think that we have a tremendous opportunity for real bipartisan legislation to institute universal background checks and close purchasing loopholes, something that has 97% support among the population and tremendous support on both sides of the aisle in Congress. So I think that there's a lot of room to tackle those kinds of issues. Infrastructure is another area of policy that is something that both Republicans and Democrats in Congress are really interested in moving forward on. And there should be lots of ways that we can move forward together. So, you know, those are just a couple off the top of my head. But I think that there's a long list of issues like that.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guest is Dana Balter, Democratic candidate for Congress in New York's 24th Congressional District. The incumbent, Congressman Katko, has passed a number of initiatives in his first couple terms, more than most other members did at his level of seniority. And that has been something that he has pushed when he has talked about his tenure. One ranking of freshman members of Congress after his first term had him as the most effective new member of Congress. How do you assess that claim? How do you assess that characterization of him?
Well, I appreciate that level of commitment and that work that he's done. To me, it is not sort of the only measure that matters. And what I'm really concerned about is not necessarily the number of pieces of legislation that my representative works on. It's the issues that my representative chooses to tackle and where my representative stands on the issues that matter the most to our communities. And again, given the chaos of everything that is happening this year, I'm concerned that Congressman Katko has been absent on some of the biggest issues. And even the issues where he claims independence from his party, like health care, right? So he voted against the AHCA, the health care bill in the House, and uses that as a signal of his independence from his party. But then he voted for the tax bill, which effectively guts the AACA, after promising his constituents that he would not repeal the ACA without a good replacement. And while technically the tax bill isn't a repeal, it accomplishes virtually the same thing. On top of that, when the health care debate was going on in the House, Congressman Katko, who wants to be a champion for mental health, was nowhere saying mental health parity needs to be in our health care law, which it wasn't in that bill that passed. Where was he calling for that? Where was he standing on the floor of the House saying we have to protect treatment for substance abuse? That wasn't part of the conversation. And as somebody who claims to be a champion in the opioid crisis, he should have been on the House floor demanding that. He should have been talking to his colleagues and rallying them around the things that need to be in that health care law. So those are parts of the picture that are incredibly important to me, more than numbers of bills.
We only have about a minute left, but I want to squeeze one more question in here, and it's on another policy area. Import tariffs have been in the news recently, but I should note, as of this conversation we're having right now, the administration's plans have not been made official. Mm-hmm. But leaders in your party in recent years have become more protectionist than they were before. What are your views on tariffs and free trade and protectionism? In a minute.
Okay. So I will try to keep this very short. And I'll just share basically two thoughts with you. I am concerned about a protectionist approach, not just in terms of trade, but as an overall perspective on foreign policy and our engagement with the world. I think that protectionism as a strategy is not a good strategy. And one of the reasons, and this is where my concern on protectionist trade policies come in, Donald Trump came out and said we should have a trade war. Trade wars are good. Trade wars are not good. They serve to alienate our allies. They give other countries like China the opportunity to become dominant in markets. And they end up hurting more American consumers than they help. So I have a lot of concern about that general approach to the policy.
That was Dana Balter. Again, she's a candidate for Congress in New York's 24th Congressional District, running as a Democrat. Dana, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you for having me, Grant.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. For a continuation of the conversation you've just heard, please go to WRVO.org and please tune in again to WRVO Public Media for more conversations in the public interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.